Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Thursday. Hope everybody's had a good day thus far. It's going to be hot again today. I think 90 degrees. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. Elijah Campbell manning the board at our Wholesale Inc. Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You heard him this morning for 4 hours with Robbie Stanley. He was filling in for Joe Rexroad on Robbie and Rexroad. He'll do it again tomorrow. He's David Beauclair. He's with SI.com, and he now joins us. The man who's got, I don't know what you call it, a profile pick. Elijah's much younger, David. He calls it a banner pick on Twitter. But you've got you next to Ken Wisenhunt. There's got to be a story behind that. I've got to know what.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't know what day that was specifically. I think the expression on my face was probably fairly common for most of us who are around for most or all of the Wisenhunt era.
We'll yeah, the look, David, is, Coach, after you won the opening game, what happened in the next 15 games? Maybe yeah, that I mean, kind of look?
Yeah, I guess. Or are you really just saying that right now? Whatever it was, I don't know. But you got to give Ken Wisenhunt that much. There is no better training camp coach than Ken Wisenhunt. His week one record was fantastic, exemplary.
Flawless.
You give that. You give that man 7 weeks to prepare for a game. He'll have his team ready. Give him 7 days, it turns into a bit of an issue.
Look, if there is a week one Hall of Fame, maybe not in Canton, maybe it's in Akron, they'll put a coat on him. He's in there.
Exactly.
How you doing? It's been a while since we've talked to you.
I'm good. I need to squeeze in a nap here at some point today.
Yeah,
I was going to say, your stamina, this is really going above and beyond. You're guest hosting, and then you have to do a gig at 11. Like, this is prime nap time here.
Yeah, well, no, actually, I'm going to have to get a little bit of work in. We've got a Mike Vrabel press conference here at 12:30, so it'll be later this afternoon, but I will be reclining at some point.
Yeah, we are going to air that live today at 12:30. So let's just start there. What are your impressions of Mike Vrabel to this point? How would you describe his work he's done thus far in this market as the Titans head coach?
You know, I think all in all, you have to say he's done a good job. Just the fact that he's showing some staying power. You go 3 years with Mike Munchak, a year and a half with Ken Wisenhunt, 2.5 years with Mike Mularkey, and you know, now you finally you finally got a guy who's going, looks like he's going to stick around for a while. From a game management standpoint, a preparation standpoint, it's pretty tough to argue with his record at this point. I like the fact that he is sort of a big picture guy. Looks to me like a guy who probably is meant to be a head coach. I said late in the show this morning, you know, the one thing he has to show is he relies very heavily, or has relied very heavily so far, on pre-existing relationships. You know, when he put his coaching staff together, it was a lot of guys he worked with at Houston and or, you know, Ohio State that he, you know, people that he already knew. He's had a preference for players from his Houston days that he worked with there. When you think of Jadeveon Clowney and Jonathan Joseph and Kevin Johnson, and there's even been a whole bunch of lesser players that he knew. Like, at some point, those relationships are going to run dry. And what I want to see from him is his ability to identify personnel, whether it's coaches, whether it's players, whatever, you know, consistently, like people that he doesn't know, but he can say, okay, this guy is going to be good for us because. And I think that's going to be a big hurdle for him to overcome here in the next couple of years.
Well, hasn't he learned that from the best in Foxborough? I mean, he recycles them better than anybody. I mean, he's got to have a recycle bin the size of my cul-de-sac, you know, of all the coaches that come, they go, and they come back, and they go, and they come back. That's all he's ever done. It's like, it's almost like big news if you hear of a guy that's never been on Belichick's staff, on his staff. I mean, Patricia goes, runs away, and then they come back. I mean, that's just what they do. Maybe he learned that from Bill.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, but he is clearly very he's clearly much more comfortable with guys he has known beforehand. And, you know, like I say, eventually all the players who played for him or on that team when he was there in Houston are going to be out of the league. And, you know, you're going to have to, I guess, babe, maybe at that point he'll start bringing back former Titans players then.
Yeah, there you go. I put Willie and Chase on the spot with this question yesterday. So, David, sorry, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
With these questions today. I'm going to start with what you like. Just whatever comes to mind, I'm going to do what you like and what you don't like as we sit here on June, let's make it official, June 17th. So we're about 5 weeks out from training camp. Just give us one thing you like about the Titans sitting here on June 17th. How would you answer that?
I assume we're talking about something a little more obvious than the fact that Derrick Henry is, or a little more obscure than the fact that Derrick Henry is the running back, right?
Yeah, yeah. Just something besides the best running back in the NFL, yes.
You know, I'll say this, based on what I've seen this week during minicamp, I like Jackrabbit Jenkins and,
okay.
and his attitude. This is a guy. If you watched him in practice the last couple days, he's 32 years old. He's 9 years in the league, got some pelts on the wall. He is out there competing like a rookie. I mean, and when I say competing, I mean laying out, knocking down passes, going shoulder to shoulder with receivers, making sure they don't catch the ball. He, you know, Cameron Batson got him bad on a double move at one point on Tuesday, but the fact that he was going so hard that he bit on the first move, you know, was eye opening in its own way. That's been really surprising to me. And over the last 10 or 15 years, I've seen way too many defensive backs on this team who during practice will put their foot in the ground, break on the ball, take a stride or two, and then just let up like, okay, good, I got that in the game, I'm good. Or they're running stride for stride with the receiver down the field, ball goes up in the air, and eventually they just stop running, let the receiver catch the ball, say, yeah, I was with him, I'm good. That sort of competitiveness, Malcolm Butler was certainly a competitive cornerback and a guy who wanted to battle, but in terms of practice, it's been interesting. It's been surprising for me to watch, and with the concerns about overhauling virtually the entire secondary and what that's going to be like, I don't think there's any question that Jenkins is going to be a tone setter for that group and not just a guy who's showing up cashing another paycheck late in his career.
I love it. That's exactly what I was looking for. That's good stuff. Okay, how about the thing you don't like right now about the Titans as we sit here on June 17th?
I am... I'm not crazy about the fact that they haven't really done much to address the tight end position after the loss of Jonnu Smith. And granted, Jonnu Smith is not an easy guy to replace, but they haven't really tried. They re-signed Jeff Swaim and they re-signed Anthony Firkser, and both those guys are what they are. You know, they're players who contributed to this team last year, but they're not creating any problems or any issues for opposing defenses. If Swaim's on the field, you can almost bet it's a running play. If Firkser's on the field, you can almost bet it's a pass play. And tight end is such an evolving position in the NFL right now, and a place where teams are sort of setting themselves apart on offense and the Titans seem to be really, really ordinary, I think, at that spot.
Okay, so we did this earlier in the week. So we're going to set the over-under on Anthony Firkser catches this season at 39.5. Of course, we came up with that number because he had 39 last season. So do you think he will have a better season this year? And you say, well, duh, Jonnu Smith is out of the picture. Yeah, but they've added Julio Jones. So that's going to take away a lot as well. So do you think he will do better, or would you take the under? Which way are you going on catches this year?
I would take the under because not necessarily because Julio Jones is directly going to take snaps or take throws from him. I think it's his snaps are going to go down. You know, Firkser are an overlooked aspect of last season's performance was when Adam Humphries got hurt, was Firkser was a guy who picked up a lot of snaps in the slot last year. You know, they used him in that regard, and Ryan Tannehill trusted him there. with Jones, now Josh Reynolds is going to slide into the slot if Cam Batson's not the guy in there. All of a sudden, you know, Firkser is kind of third on the depth chart at that particular position. So I just think he's going to end up with fewer opportunities that way. And I would, and you know, if I'm Ryan Tannehill, I'm looking to AJ Brown and Julio Jones then, you know, kind of obviously, I guess, in that assessment too. And that, you know, that's where I'm trying to throw the ball. So I think he'll be under. And with, assuming Darrington Evans is healthy too, the screen game and some stuff you can do with the backs out of the backfield that they didn't really do are going to be available in the short passing game. So all that stuff is going to take opportunities away from Firkser that he got last year.
Okay, you went exactly where I was going next. Can they get production out of the backfield other than number 22? Can they get somebody else to give him some relief or maybe catch a, you know, a screen pass? Can they get anything from that position, which they haven't done a good job of the last couple of seasons?
The guy to watch in the backfield there, or in the preseason there, is Brian Hill, you know, who's come over from the Falcons. He's a guy who's been in the league for a few years and is sort of somewhere between Derrick Henry and Darrington Evans. You know, he's 6'1", 219, so he's got some bulk to him. Again, nobody's going to be Derrick Henry, but, you know, he's a guy who's rushed for a little more than 450 yards in a season. He caught 25 passes last year. So, if you feel the need to take some burden off Derrick Henry, Brian Hill is probably going to have to be the guy to do it. I don't think Jeremy McNichols is, you know, a regular. He's a good guy. He's a guy who will be available if somebody gets hurt. But it seems like it's his lot in life to be that guy who just has to stay in shape and stay ready. But Brian Hill, this will be his fifth year in the league. I think it falls on him to make the coaches feel a little bit more comfortable about having something else back there.
David LeClair is with us talking a little Titans here, and David, we're all curious about what makes Todd Downing tick. He's going to be on the spot. He's been dealt this really great hand. It's a big challenge for him, high expectations. What are your first impressions of him? I know there's only been a couple of conversations since he took over.
Yeah, it's tough to get a read on him. He's kind of a quiet guy. In fact, I was surprised he's much more vocal on the practice field than I would have suspected, and more than I remember when he was leading the tight end. So I think I said this morning, guys, that I think the big thing for Todd Downing, given the weapons he has, is don't overthink this and don't try to show how smart and creative you have. You know, you have the best power back in football. The way he impacts the game is obvious. So hand him the ball, run the play actions, you know, create opportunities for Julio Jones and AJ Brown to get in space and emphasize those two guys and do that. You know, don't try necessarily to distinguish yourself from Arthur Smith in any way. That, you know, part of the reason he got this job is for continuity. He knows the playbook. He's been involved in creating the playbook the last couple of years, and you know, just stick to it. Obviously, there's going to be some differences. His personality, his feel, his sort of rhythm for going through the game is going to be different. But I think the way he gets in trouble is if he really tries to make some big changes just to make changes.
I think that's a really interesting point. And David, this is what we've kicked around as an offshoot to that. Like you said, he's been with the tight ends, right? But the tight end position is different now, right? Right? They don't know exactly where it's going to go. You said they haven't addressed it. Maybe there's another move to be made. But I think we're all wondering, with Julio Jones coming in, particularly with the actual formation. I think we were reading, I know one of the things that Joe put together on The Athletic was just the amount of time that they use the two tight ends. It's as much or more than anybody in the league. But will that change some? Will that force them to sort of get out of that, just take the keys from Arthur Smith and then plug it in and run the same stuff. It's almost going to force some evolution there.
Yeah, and I'd like to know, you know, on a closer analysis too, how many of those times that the two tight ends were out there, like I mentioned earlier, that Firkser was in the slot, because a lot of times, you know, he was actually a third wide receiver more than a second tight end. It seems to me that they clearly favor the big wide receivers. You know, Reynolds and Jones and Brown are all bigger than 6 foot, and Jones and Brown are well over 200 pounds. Josh Reynolds is just shy of that. If that's the image you want to present when you're breaking the huddle, is this, you know, those three guys plus Derrick Henry in the backfield, then there's nothing wrong with that. You can stick with that and sort of intimidate and punish defenses as much as possible. It's the formula, and until Derrick Henry proves that he can't carry the load, I think you just keep putting the load on him and let him go, and everything else is sort of secondary to that.
I think that's something that is worth watching, is that can they stay with that intimidating, that identity that they've built over the last few years, that when you play the Titans, it's going to be tough. They're going to come at you physically. They're going to beat you down. Henry is going to pound you. Because can they work Julio Jones into that seamlessly? He said all the right things, David, as you heard. I think it's been impressive how unselfish they've come across to start with. But just making all the pieces fit, I think it's a fair question to ask. How challenging is that going to be?
Yeah, I have been saying, and you know, if you're a fantasy football owner, you know, something to think about. I don't anticipate that Julio Jones will put up anything close to the catch numbers that he put up for years in Atlanta. Like I don't see him catching 80 balls or 90 balls or whatever. I honestly think it'll be more like the 50 to 60 range when all is said and done. But I also think his yards per catch will be as good as, if not better than it's ever been. And you know, on 60 catches, he could be over 1,000 yards, maybe even 1,200 yards. Like it wouldn't stun me if he averages 20 yards per catch, given the way I think they're going to use him and the opportunities they'll have to use him in connection with Derrick Henry and Derrick Henry's reputation, so to speak.
Let me sneak one more in, David. What about the workload for Derrick Henry? Is that concerning to you at all? We spent a lot of time on our show last year. You know, we've seen the numbers historically. When you carried as many times as he did, there could be a drop-off, and sometimes it's a steep drop-off. Now, it's hard to envision that. You see how powerful he is in the prime of his career. But ideally, do you think they would like to shave off some of the carries there?
I think when you're sitting here in June and you're talking about these things, and I imagine, and I say that, you know, imagining their coaches' meetings, that yes, they say, you know, it'd be a good idea to give Eddie or to give Derrick Henry a little bit of a break somewhere along the line, particularly with a 17th game now this season. You know, that's one more week, one more game that you've got to get him through. But when you get into the season and you get into those games and you see the effect he starts having on defenses, and you know that when they start wearing down, he has the potential to break that big one that it's really tough to get away from. But you know, to your point, Willie, you and I have both been around long enough. We remember when Eddie George had 403 carries back in 2000.
Oh yeah,
and then never averaged three and a half yards of carry for the rest of his career after that. It absolutely is a concern, but Henry has stood up to, you know, it was a concern last year after the numbers he put up in 2019, particularly during the playoff run, and he came back just fine from that. We've all seen all the workout videos. If anybody is built to sort of do this for more than just a year or two, it seems like Derrick Henry's that guy. So again, until he proves he can't deliver the way he has, I think you just keep with it and let him go.
Speaking of Eddie, as we wrap this up, how do you think he's going to do at TSU?
You know, just he'll certainly do great from an inspirational standpoint. He's certainly smart enough to know how to hire a coaching staff and let his coaches do their job. It's not an easy job, but the excitement and enthusiasm he'll inject immediately will be worth something. And I think, I've never seen Eddie George come close to failing at anything. And what success looks like at TSU in 2021, I don't know that I have a clear picture of that, but I think Eddie George will succeed to kind of whatever degree he wants to or thinks is reasonable there.
Yeah. I guess it depends on what they're looking for or what they're calling success over there. I guess that's how you answer that. Thanks for the visit. Really appreciate it. And we'll be listening tomorrow morning. Thanks for doing
this. Okay, boys. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is David Beauclair, SI.com. He'll be filling in for Joe Rexroad again tomorrow morning with Robbie Stanley on Robbie and Rexroad. We'll come back and discuss more of that on the other side. Some interesting points made there. By the way, it was pretty timely on the Eddie George discussion. He did name his staff yesterday. It became official, even though a lot of names have been leaked out there for a while. But we'll come back. More on the other side as you listen to Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.